Threat Film Radio. One World International Human Rights Documentary Film Festival in Prague, Czech Republic.
Threat Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2018 One World International Human Rights Documentary Film Festival, and I'm very pleased to be joined by filmmaker Kim Longinotto. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hello.
And subject of a retrospective here, three of your films are screening at the festival. So first of all, do you come to Prague often?
No, I think it's my first time, but I might have been here and wiped it from my mind, but I think this is my first time.
It's your very first time?
I think so.
Right. So, but do you kind of, are you influenced by some of the arts from here or some of the movies from here?
I remember watching quite a few Czech films, but recently I've been watching a lot of Italian films,
right.
Early Italian films, like Nome della Legge, those sort of old black and white films, because I'm making an archive film about Italy, yes.
Oh, so that's what you're working on at the
yes.
moment. Can you tell me a little bit more about it?
It's a film about Letizia Battaglia, who's a Sicilian photographer, and her contacts with the mafia.
I don't know anything about her.
That's good. Well, then you'll see the film.
Never heard of her. That sounds interesting. And why did you decide to tell her story?
Because she's a very unusual. She's 84 now. She's an old woman. And she's lived this amazing life. She's broken all the conventions. She left her husband. She set up a life for herself. So because she's a rebel, really. A rebel person who changes her life.
Wow, that's great. And you're working with a lot of archive footage.
Yes, yes.
What's the difference between, obviously there's lots of differences between working with archive and stuff that you actually shoot, right? Do you enjoy both?
I think I prefer working with stuff I actually shoot. It's so much easier. When you're working with archive, you have to piece together and you can't get exactly what you need. You have to find it or imagine it or dream it. Whereas when it's something I've filmed myself, I know it's going to work and I know how I've got a beginning, middle and end. Archive is painstaking and it's also more expensive. So I think I won't do another one.
Kind of a process of discovery, but it's very different, but you're still exploring, right?
Yes, you're exploring, yeah.
So going back to the very beginnings, because you know this is obviously the question that you get asked all the time, but I don't know, I read somewhere, and this is always a terrible way to start a question, but that you were that your father was a photographer, right?
It did influence me a lot that my father was a photographer. I swore I would never have anything to do with cameras because I didn't get on with my dad. And the way he took photographs was quite, I wouldn't say abusive, but it was, you'd have to sit in the same position and he'd put lights on you and he'd get really cross if you moved. And you'd get hot and you'd have to have your hair permed and, you know. And then I did adverts. I did photos and also was in a lot of advertisements when I was a kid. And there again, I had to go to the hairdresser, put on a nice dress, everything I hated doing. So it's a surprise as much to me as to anybody else that I'm doing films because I thought I'll do anything else but that. My love for the camera definitely didn't come out of that. I hated the camera and I liked doing the adverts because when I was doing the adverts, people were nice to me and they'd pretend to be my mother and they would hug me and I'd think, oh, they're very nice, and then you'd never see them again. So that was quite confusing. But it definitely didn't make me go into films. I always thought I'd be a writer. I wanted to write novels. I definitely didn't want to make films.
Again, another thing that I read and was that you went to boarding school, but that you struggled to make friends there? Is that true?
It was a very strange... We have them a lot in the UK. I think you have them in Ireland as well. They're very abusive places. They're horrible places. You get sent away, and if you're lucky, you get nice nuns or nice teachers. But if you're unlucky, you get really bitter, angry people who hate children. And as far as I could see, most of the teachers that I grew up with in the school really didn't like children, and me least of all. But what was interesting was when I went back to make the film, I thought, because I was always in trouble and nobody liked me, I thought they would remember me. And I would have to convince them. I'd have to say, look, you do remember me. I had a difficult time here, but I've changed and I want to make a film. But what was fascinating was that nobody remembered me. So, and that was good in one way. It was a relief that it wasn't really anything to do with me. But another way, I felt kind of hurt. I thought I was singled out for punishment because I was special, but actually I didn't even mean anything to you. So it was a very weird feeling of being completely forgettable, but being I was a focus for their abuse a lot of the time. When I say abuse, silly things like having to sleep not in my dormitory, and like you'd go under the carpet and you'd be sleeping under the carpet in this drafty balcony. I mean, crazy punishments that they'd make you do, because they can. And it made me, I think it changed my life being at that school in a way that people say prison does or army does, because it made me have a very deep and bitter attitude to authority. It made me want to confront authority and distrust authority. And so that's why, coming back to Leticia Battaglia, I was attracted to her, because she's somebody who's saying, I'm not going to live how I'm supposed to live, I'm going to do a new life. And even though I haven't done that, I like filming people that have. It's a very passive, easy way of, you know, being a rebel. You just film other rebels.
Is it easy to come across rebels in everyday life?
They're everywhere, and that's wonderful, and I love them, yes.
So which ones do you, when do you realise that this is a rebel whose story is worth telling?
They come in different ways. Sometimes I might read about them. The first Japanese film I made was about an activist woman called Haniyagi Genshu, and she was a woman who stabbed the head of her dance school. She was what was called a travelling player. She used to go from village to village with her father and put on these little plays, and they'd sleep in barns, and she was illiterate. And when she went to prison for stabbing this head of the dance school, which was like a protest about the hierarchy in Japan, she taught herself to read and write in prison and came out, and she became a big star. So I thought that was a wonderful story. So I went to Japan and made a film about her.
So that just really happened. It can happen impulsively, and you just get this idea. You meet someone and you decide to film their story.
It could be an article. There was one film called Rough Aunties, and the woman who ran the organisation came to London to ask me to make the film. That was brilliant that they came to ask me. Or I can meet somebody by chance. Or, you know, they come from different places.
Do you get many requests of people asking you to film them?
No, not really. That was one wonderful experience, which is why I remembered it. You know, sometimes I have to go and find people. And sometimes I read about them. You know, they come from different places.
What about this? I mean, I always find that, like, you know, with documentary filmmaking, you could end up... I'm equally as fascinated with the post-production process, because I'm fascinated with the film image itself and the way in which we may react to it. Like, I can react differently to it and someone else reacts differently to it. But what about the, you know, you filming it? Do you maybe sometimes realize only after shooting it what you've got in the can?
No, I always know exactly what I've got, and I have a beginning, middle and end, and I have a notebook, and I know roughly how long it's going to be. I'm really clear what I'm filming. But I do love what you just said, because I've been to a lot of films recently with my housemate or with close friends. Like, I went to see American Honey, and I loved it, and I've seen it twice now, and he hated it. And there's a film called Fantastic Woman. It was a Chilean film. It just won the Oscar, and I adored it. And my friend said, oh, you don't get to know anybody else. It's so superficial. So, and in a way, that cheers me, because I think what it is, you know, we all react in different ways to films, Matt, because what we do is we take our own experience, and we live through the film through our own experience. So if it doesn't resonate with you, you're not going to like it. So, for example, I love boarding school films. Anything about girls incarcerated, or anything about cults. I love reading books about cults or religious, you know, religious places where people are imprisoned, or, you know, and I love films like American Honey, where you go on a journey and people change. Where some people like films where you have a hero and she stays a hero all the way through. I like films when people change. So one of my favourite things ever in recent years is a series called Breaking Bad. And the reason I loved that so much was the first person you meet practically is called Jesse. And he's the sort of the bad guy, the naughty kid. And he becomes the moral heart of the series. And the person you think is the good person, the middle class man with a wife and kids, becomes a really, you know, he becomes the black side of Jesse. Jesse's the sort of green side, and the other guy, you know. So I love films where people change and you have the space to see change. All your perception of them changes. And also that you have contradictions. So, for example, in Dreamcatcher, and it's something that people have been quite critical of, the woman who, when she was a little girl, was a victim, because she's having to survive on the streets, she actually at one point becomes a victimizer. She becomes somebody that entraps young girls and forces them into sex work through her pimp. And I love that. I love that it's not simple and it's not easy. And that the pimp, who's supposedly the enemy, you see that he's been a victim as well. That's what I'm more and more interested in doing, seeing things as contradictions.
Well, you raise an interesting point there. Do you think that you have to agree with a film ideologically to deem it a good film, or does that make a film good?
That's an interesting question. I think it's good if it challenges you. I do prefer films. I quite like films with happy endings. I have to admit, a weakness. I love coming out, and I love people triumphing over adversity. I do, even if in a small way, or at least trying. So, for example, the Polish film Ida, was made by a friend of mine. I was absolutely heartbroken that she went back to the convent, and I thought, oh no, Pavel, this is such a good film, but if I'd made it, she would not have gone back. I want the person to... I don't want them to do the weak thing. Lars von Trier does that. And for me, it's a really important thing that people... that there is hope, and that people... even... I mean, it can be sad, but they have to triumph in some small way for me.
I guess the happy ending is a filmic trait, even more than a TV trait, right?
I mean, in a way, Matt, I don't really mean happy ending. I mean that... the person, there's a point in them struggling, because if the person just gets back to where they start from, it makes you feel helpless. It locks you in your victimhood. But if somehow the victim manages to have a small victory or inspire somebody else to a victory, that's often not happy, but at least there's a sense that it's worth fighting. Because I'm not saying we should, but I'm saying I should. For me, I want people to come away and feel stronger. I don't want them to come away and feel hopeless.
Yeah. But what about your own films then? Do you wait for something, you know, like that, a moment like that, to finish your film?
I totally do. I have to admit. Rough Aunties, I waited until Mildred got her house. Dreamcatcher, I wanted there to be a moment at the end when you felt her love and you felt positive. They've all got sisters-in-law, they win the case. You know, I hang on to there's a... I mean, obviously, a lot of the films are quite sad, so there's things that can't be mended, and I'm not saying everything's all right in the end, but I just want there to be a moment near the end, where there is some sort of resolution or transformation, really. You know, because as we know, life doesn't have happy endings, but you have moments of happiness. You have moments when you think, actually, it was worth doing all these things. It was worth it because I'm a stronger person or they're a stronger person. You know, I hate victim films. And too many films about women, the women go back or the women are victims. I want to make a film about survivors.
Can you tell me a little bit more about why you think that's the case with about women representation?
I don't know. I mean, I did say when I watched Ida with Pavel, I did ask him, why did she go back? And he got a bit cross. It was like, you know, I mean, I've never met Lars von Trier, but I would say to him, oh, I'm so cross that she went back. Why would she go back to her own doom? You know, she goes back to the boat. And I was really upset by it, you know, because when I was watching the film, because I identified with her and the situation. And the kind of films I love are where something comes out and you can feel that you're made slightly more positive or stronger. I'm not saying... I mean, Hollywood happy endings are so... I hate it when it ends in marriage or, you know, everything
happy ending.
No, that's a...
that's an ending. That's a moment of compromise.
That is so good that you say that, because I when I say things like that, people say I'm, you know, I'm fundamentalist. No, I think that's a very unhappy ending. Do you know what I mean? Has to... Yes, yes. So, no, I hate it when they always end in stupid weddings. But, but you know, and the sort of tyranny...
What about the femme fatale? Do you like the femme fatale?
Not particularly. I think there, again, it's a little box, because the femme fatale is kind of doing things through her sexuality. She hasn't got any other agency at all. Sorry, that sounds awfully jargonistic. But she's just kind of... that's all she is. I like it more... you know, there's a Taxing Woman, which is a Japanese film, or films where people leap out of their own cultures and transform their lives, doing the most unexpected things. So, for example, Mildred in Rafanti, she leaves her husband, she leaves her house, she gets her own house, she doesn't even move with her boyfriend, she lives on her own, which is kind of unheard of for an African woman in South Africa. So, and that happened for real. I didn't make it happen, you know, obviously. But when I met Mildred, I sort of fell in love with her. I thought, you're a really special woman. I have to make this film about you. You have to be the heart of it. She's now running the whole organization. So, you know, and that makes me feel good. It makes, you know, otherwise, I mean, there's so many things that you wake up in the morning and the radio comes on and it's about Syria and there's so much pain in the world. And everything seems so hopeless, you know, that people are locked in these conflicts. I think in a way, I'm not saying anyone ought to, because that would be a terrible thing to do. But for me, I want to make films about survivors.
It's funny, it's interesting you mentioned that, and I know we're going way over time, but it's such an interesting conversation. But it's interesting that you mentioned the way the media talks about these places, because you actually go to these very distant places now. I wonder, is part of that because you want to see these things with your own eyes?
No, not really. They could be the stories I follow. I love it if they could be in London and I could go home every night and have my cornflakes, you know. But it's the story I want to tell and the person I want to meet. And the place is a main character, but not as big. I'm interested in struggle and in people that are going against everything that they're supposed to do. And this is happening more in sub-Saharan Africa, or in places like Japan, or that is where the sort of battlefront, Afghanistan, you know, India. That is the film I made, Salma, is about a woman who was locked in a room for, I think it was 25 years, because she wasn't allowed out. She wasn't allowed to go to school. And I'd always wanted to tell that story because people say, oh, you know, because they're faceless and they're voiceless. We all, you know, were so happy when Nelson Mandela got released from prison and everybody knew about it. But there's all these women all over the world that are imprisoned in these families, yeah, and nobody talks about it. So you have to find a woman that's come out. And that story is very unusual. You have to find a woman that's kept her resistance and has left that situation and is starting a sort of... Salma's now opened a school in her village, so she's starting a little revolution in her village. So that's what I'm excited about.
Is it that much more difficult to find stories like that in your own back garden than it is in distant places? And why do you think that is?
I don't think it's harder to find them in my own back garden, but it's a matter of chance. That I haven't found anyone that was prepared to go against her whole family like Salma did. She shocked everybody by being in the film, agreeing to be in the film. But also I think, in a way, the things that are at stake in my country are much less. I mean, all the arguments now are about equal pay, about women getting more money for films, whereas actually in India and in China, and it's actually a matter of life. You know, it's people fighting to have lives, people fighting to go to school, people fighting not to be married at 12. She was betrothed, or whatever the horrible word is, to her husband when she was like 9. You know, it was all arranged. So, you know, I think those are... It dwarfs everything else in a way. But I'd love to make a really happy film about something good as well, in London.
Well, what can you think of anything off the top of your head?
No, I can't think of anything at the moment, but I'll find something. Or in Prague, where they have, you know, lovely coffee shops and nice people. But, you know.
Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure.
I loved it. Very good.
And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.